Good afternoon and happy Veterans Day to everyone who served, and we appreciate and honor you today, as we should do every day. This program is a very special program dedicated to our veterans around the world, and we've got some terrific a terrific lineup of folks here live in the studio. First of all, we have Joe Williams from EVAC, the Endowment for Veterans Art Campaign, that's based here in Kansas City. He'll be talking to us about the services that are offered for veterans and really the art marketplace and everything that has to do with working with veterans and creativity. We also have in the studio Pets for Vets program with Chris White, the owner of Dog Obedience Group in Blue Springs, Missouri, and he's going to talk about pairing up pets with vets to help them through medical and emotional and companionship, sort of situations that will help heal. And later on in the afternoon, we have a tribute to Sandra Moran, who recently passed on Saturday, November 7th. I have a rebroadcast of Mi Amor, Love Stories or Not, where Sandra she wrote a fictional story about love and then read it. And so we want to hear her voice and her laughter once again. So let's get started. I want to welcome Joe Williams to ArtSpeak Radio. And EVAC, again, the acronym is Endowment for Veterans Art Campaign. The mission of EVAC is a social venture to create a new organization and culture that supports and encourages veterans to use art as a tool for self-expression, a means to communicate with their families and communities, and successfully reassimilate back into society and their new lives as disabled American veterans. So welcome, Joe. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, art can heal. Art is a great way to sort of work out feelings and ideas and thoughts. So Endowment for Veterans Art Campaign, how does that function?
Really, it's a program that really came out of necessity when I really started this social venture aspect. I spent 7 years in the Marine Corps, and, you know, during that time, it was one of the best times of my life. I absolutely loved being a Marine. I loved what I was doing. Unfortunately, I was hurt in 2005 doing rescue release for Hurricane Katrina, and then I was hurt again in 2008 when I was going to officer candidate school. But really, this whole program just came out of really necessity to make my life better and to really help me cope with the realities of my injuries and what was going on in my life. Mm-hmm. As I said, I loved being a Marine. It was something that I wanted to make a career out of. It was something that I really wanted to be a part of. I loved the family aspect mm-hmm. of all of it. And then in 2008, once my injuries really, took a toll on my life, that's when everything changed for me. I really was in a dark place after, my injury. I vividly remember sitting in my colonel's office with my orthopedic surgeon and them telling me that my Marine Corps career was over and, they weren't even sure if I was ever going to be able to walk right again. And that took a heavy toll on me. After that, I became incredibly depressed. I was even suicidal. I tried to take my own life in 2009 because I couldn't cope with the reality of what I was going through at the time. I was really a part of the Marine Corps. It was my family at the time, and it was something that I absolutely loved. And I was an extremely active person. I loved to play soccer. I loved to run. And that's a big part of what being a Marine is as well. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was all taken away from me very quickly and very abruptly. And I didn't know how to cope with the realities of that. And so really in 2009, I really started, all these surgeries on my foot, to get it better. And during that time, I remember laying down after one of my surgeries and, I was really in a dark place and I started flipping through my sketch pad that I had. And when I was going through my sketch pad, I was realizing that all these things that were going on in my head, this depression, the anxiety, the anger, the bitterness was coming out onto the paper. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going back and looking at those sketches, it just, it kind of dawned on me that I was expressing myself in a positive way, that I was getting my emotions out there, that I wasn't bottling it up anymore and, you know, forming self-destructive habits. And so that's where I knew that art was going to have a major impact on my life. You know, and it was really from going through a really terrible situation, traumatic experience, that I learned that art can save my life and art can truly help me form the person of who I want to be and who or what I want to do with the rest of my life. You know, just like I said, I wanted to be a Marine for the rest of my life. I wanted to make a career out of it. And, you know, I got built up so much to be a Marine. You know, I went through boot camp, went through everything. I was, you know, enlisted for 7 years. And, you know, during that whole entire time, especially in the military, you know, they teach you how to destroy. That's, you know, what your job is. I mean, especially I was aviation ordnance. So, you know, I worked on weapon systems for aircraft, you know, armed, de-armed bombs, loaded bombs, did everything. So I really knew the destructive nature of what we're capable of. But when I was getting out, I didn't know how to rebuild my life. I didn't know how to step away from being Sergeant Williams and being Joey again. And that's what art really did for me, especially in that really dark time of my life. I started using art to rediscover myself. And, you know, that was a huge component of what saved my life, was I was able to find a new voice. Mm-hmm. I was be able to move past being a Marine and move on to being an artist. And it truly was what saved my life.
That's a beautiful and powerful, you know, beginning to that. And do you feel that many veterans have similar stories where they're going through what you experienced?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I talk to veterans all across the nation, you know, really about art and what art can do in their lives. And one of the common themes that I've ran across is, you know, a lot of times veterans feel secluded and isolated, especially when they get out of the service. You know, when we're in service in the military, we're so used to having that camaraderie, those bonds, that family type of aspect. And, you know, when we get out of the military and come back to civilian life, we're really not sure how to reintegrate ourselves back into society, really even back into our families, and really to be who you were before, you know, you were in service. You know, because so much of your identity, you know, gets stripped away at boot camp and, you know, built back up to be, you know, a Marine, a soldier, airman, sailor. And, you know, and that's one problem that we have, is when we transition back to civilian life, is we really don't know how to create our own lives or really how to rebuild that life component. You know, and being in the military, we naturally gravitate towards being creative, or the military fosters creativity in the sense that we have to be creative when we're accomplishing a mission. Mm-hmm. You know, we can
creative
sit there.
Problem solving.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's just, we can sit there and plan all day long for a mission. You know, and the first thing is, you know, what we say in the Marine Corps is, when that first round comes down range, you know, your, you know, plan of attack, your order is completely out the windows, and you're really kind of improvising. And that's really what, you know, I love about veterans that are getting into art, is we're able to use our military experiences and the creative ideas that we form up, and there are creative thinking strategies that we have, we're able to translate that back into art. One thing that I realized with talking with all these veterans across the country was a lot of them do art naturally. You know, whether they're active duty, whether they're veterans, one way or another, they're always making art, whether that's doing photography or sculptures or writing or something of the sort.
But you yourself, have you ever really dabbled in art prior to service or as a young man?
Yeah, I'm dyslexic, so I've always gravitated towards doing art. I've always loved art, and you know.
But I tell you what, I think dyslexic people make the best artists. It's been my experience, it really has.
I know, we might not be able to read all that much, but we can certainly constantly be creative in
Absolutely.
Our own ways or make up for those deficiencies in ways.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always done art, and even when I was active duty, you know, I was still doing art, I was still drawing, I was taking photography, you know, building these little sculptures and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So it always has. But I never really appreciated it until after my injury. You know, after my injury, I really kind of like dove into art and just realized how important art was in my life.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
I look back now as a child and, you know, teenager, you know, growing up, I just realized art was always my outlet.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't until these traumatic events happened that I came to appreciate how important art is in my life and how important it is for me to make art on a daily basis.
So with that experience, and realizing how art was important to you and how it sort of transformed you in a sense, you set up the EVAC, which, again, is Endowment for a Veterans Art Campaign. And so what it is a new program that really begins to focus on a self-constructive outlet, and it helps veterans just develop new habits while returning to the families, communities, and so on. So tell me more about the program. I mean, is there a place for artists for veterans to attend, to make art, to create art and share it?
Yes, that's actually what we're setting up right now and what we kind of have in our programs. There's quite a bit that we do with EVAC. You know, right now we actually have a partnership with Pure Pursuit Automotive downtown in Kansas City, and really they have a fine art gallery there that they're really just showcasing mm-hmm. veteran artists.
Mm-hmm. And where is that located?
It's at 16th and Walnut, so 1619 Walnut. It's called Pure Pursuit Automotive. You know, and they're gracious enough to let us come in there and really showcase veteran artwork every month. And really highly encourage people to come down and check it out and look at the creative work that veterans are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the biggest surprises for me when I started this whole kind of social venture aspect or this business was, you know, and veterans really started reaching out to me about their aspirations in art. And a lot of the times I thought I was just going to be getting a lot of military-themed art and whatnot.
Sure.
And that really wasn't the case. I was, you know, actually completely dumbfounded when, you know, I've been getting all these veterans sending me, you know, photos of their art and, you know, trying to help them get gallery shows and whatnot. But it's some of the best art that I've ever seen. It just, you know, it doesn't necessarily have, you know, a military theme to it, but you mm-hmm. can see their military experiences mm-hmm. within their art, whether that's mm-hmm. abstract paintings or sculptures or whatnot. You can really see their emotions, their experiences really poured into their art, and that's mm-hmm. what I think is so fantastic about veteran art. I really, truly think that veteran art is really the symbol of our freedoms. I mean, mm-hmm. as much as we fought and sacrificed for everything, now we're taking those experiences and putting them into our own artwork.
Mm-hmm. You know, and for our listeners, I do want to let them know that the website for EVAC or to contact Joe Williams is info@evacart.com. Is there a different website to view the work?
No, we'll have that up on our website. We have a few artists up there right now. We're in the process of actually coming up with a new website that really kind of encompasses everything that we're really trying to do with the program. You know, that involves with us, you know, showcasing veteran artwork as well as providing resources for veterans that are looking to get into art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that I tell veterans when they contact me, you know, about this art program is, you know, I could care less about your artistic ability and really your disabilities, because, you know, regardless of your abilities, regardless of your disabilities, you can always make art to make yourself better. You know, and just the whole creative process and creating art, you know, whether you're good at it or not, you're investing emotion into it. You're investing something that you never really would have thought about in the beginning. And, you know, you go through this journey of making a piece or making some artwork, and, you know, you discover yourself along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what art has done for me, and that's what I've really tried to you know, advocate to veterans about is, you know, this is something that could be great for your life to, you know, understand some things that you never really would have thought of from the beginning, and, you know, kind of having that pride and knowing that you created something beautiful and you invested yourself into it is, you know, most satisfying thing that you could do as a veteran to get better.
Now, the organization is based here in Kansas City, but approximately how many veterans do you have that are in the program or interested in showing their work, creating work?
Oh, I've had quite a few veterans that have been very interested in this. In Kansas City, you know, we've had about 50 to 100 nationwide, probably about 100 to 150. That's really starting to pick up traction, especially with post 9/11 veterans. I think a lot of us recognize the defaults and the VA system and just kind of this new age of millennials of what we would kind of want to do and all that. And so that was kind of really the necessity of this whole project. I remember going to the VA, you know, and I was going through vocational rehabilitation. I wanted to go to art school, you know, just got done with Kansas City Art Institute. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the VA, and the one thing they kept telling me is that we're here for sustainability, not self-improvement. That never set well with me.
It just
didn't set well with me that you would say that to a veteran, because especially in the military, military culture is based upon self-improvement, of making yourself better for mission success and whatnot. And so that never sat well with me. And then speaking with other veterans that are artists, you know, we kind of sat there and we all knew that we wanted to be artists and we wanted to continue on with that path. And what we did was, or what I did was, I was out there looking for resources for veterans to get in the arts, and I really didn't find really anything that much. And so that's where I really started forming this project up to help veterans and help provide resources, was, you know, the necessity that it wasn't out there.
Yeah. You know, and for listeners that are interested in contacting you or getting involved in somehow, how do they get a hold of you?
They can contact me at joe@evacart.com. That's EVACART.com. And I highly encourage anybody, whether it's, you know, civilians or veterans, this is just a great way of getting involved. This is a great way for civilians to ask those questions to veterans that they might not be afraid afraid of. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way for veterans to really express themselves and talk about their experiences through a visual manner or, you know, whatever type of artistic manner that it may be. Really, the big thing that we do with EVAC is really about community involvement. You know, a lot of times veterans come back from service and they isolate themselves, and art can help them get back out there. But the good thing is that we use art to really bridge that gap between civilian and veteran. And, you know, those are two completely different languages. But when you add in art, you know, we can use that as a translator and, you know, use it as a bridge to where we can really start communicating with your families again, with, you know, your community, and really get involved.
Joe, what would you say that you would need for your program, for the veterans? What do you need from the community? How can the community assist you?
You know, two things, really. One is always money. you know, that's something that...
That's true.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, you know, that we greatly need help on. You know, we're getting bigger and bigger. You know, we're trying to add more resources, more workshop programs for veterans. You know, and that's, you know, definitely a big part of it. But the other thing is really community involvement. You know, a lot of times civilians out there, they don't know how to – there's always this awkward conversation with, you know, somebody that you just meet and, you know, talking about your – military service. There's kind of always this awkwardness about it, or that I feel anyways, in trying to not explain myself, but, you know, talk about my experiences. And really with art, it gave me a safe place to talk about these mm-hmm. things. And that's what I really love about what we do is, you know, we use art to talk to people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, veterans do want to talk about their experiences. Mm-hmm. Really, they want to be in a safe environment to do such. And, you know, that's where we want the community to be a part of, is be mm-hmm. a part of this conversation within, you know, this art confine.
Right. And I know that, you know, if there's, I know that we have a very strong community of artists and educators there. You know, if there's a way that someone is interested in perhaps leading a workshop for, you know, the group, you know, they could certainly contact you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're always looking for, you know, civilian artists, military artists, or whatever, that want to...
Galleries,
absolutely. You know, that's one thing that we do is advocate for veteran artists that want to showcase their work in galleries. And also, we love bringing in professional artists that, mm-hmm. you know, want to teach their skill, their mm-hmm. craft to veterans that are, you know, interested in those prospective arts. You know, I've had veterans email me from all across the country, and every single email is completely different, you know, whether that's somebody wanting to learn how to weld a sculpture mm-hmm. or somebody that wants to learn how to write, somebody that wants to do culinary art, somebody that, you know, wants to do photography. All these veterans want to do something, mm-hmm. and, you know, having, you know, professionals in those areas come in, help us out, you know, teach workshops, be a mentor to a veteran, and, you know, all that greatly helps us out and, you know, what we're trying to do, and, you know, it harbors that community aspect.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joe. I'm going to have you, if you want, stick around, because I have our next guest, Chris White, who will be talking about Pets for Vets. And for more information, info at evacart.com is the website that they can contact you at. And also, EVAC, Endowment for Veterans Art Campaign, you can Google that, and you can find much more about the organization. Thank you so much. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this message. And you're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and we're celebrating our veterans today for Veterans Day, which is every day as it should be. And next, I have Chris White in the studio. He's with the program Pets for Vets, which is a program that's dedicated to supporting veterans and providing a second chance for shelter pets by rescuing, training, and pairing them with America's veterans who could benefit from a companion animal. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing your morning with me, or your afternoon with me. Pets for Vets, I understand, started here just recently, started a chapter here, and Lee Summit just recently, although they're nationwide, right?
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Now, in your role with Pets for Vets, you train the dogs and the animals to partner with veterans, right?
Yeah, we bring the... when the whole process essentially kind of starts off, and as the veteran applying, and then the trainers come in from there doing interviews and training the dog, once the veteran applies, we do multiple interviews with the veteran to find out what their lifestyle's like. Do they have any disabilities? What's their home life like? Do they have lots of stairs? And all these different questions that will help us find that perfect dog for them. For sake of example, I wouldn't want to put a couch potato 8-year-old dog with a veteran who likes to go and run 5 miles a day. Mm-hmm. Just wouldn't be fair to either of them.
What are some of the benefits that are provided for both the pets and veterans?
There's benefits. The benefits for both of them are, one, for the veteran, having that dog allows them to have something to focus on, mm-hmm. to take their mind off the day-to-day stress, whether they're out and about in a public setting, whether they're at home. And that can also take away the stress. Mm-hmm. When I can take my mind off of thinking about myself and the situations I've been in and focus on taking care of something or someone, it makes life much easier. On top of that, having a dog who never judges you on how your day is, how your past has been, they love you no matter what, and all they ask for is a little massage and a little bit of food every day, makes just as a natural calming and relaxing and kind of a de-stressor. For the dogs, Pets for Vets, we rescue all the dogs that we use. Mm-hmm. It's not coming from a breeder or anything else.
Local then?
Yes, uh-huh. It comes from all the local shelters. So mm-hmm. after we have interviewed that vet, that veteran, then we go in and try to find that right dog throughout some of the local rescues for him.
You know, because as Joe Williams, our guest today, also mentioned that veterans tend to isolate themselves, that mm-hmm. it's difficult going from military life to civilian life.
Yeah.
So what are some of the criteria that are used not only to select the animals for the vets, but mm-hmm. for the veterans themselves?
For the veterans themselves, the way our program works is we find the dog, we train the dog, and we get them set up, and we also give them an initial package to get them set up for success. And I can get into that in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But for there, we need to make sure that the veteran is stable. Are they in a housing mm-hmm. situation that they're not going to lose their house? Are they going to be able to take care of ongoing medical needs of the pet, or do they have something through maybe the VA and whatnot that'll cover those costs?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure they're set up for success there.
Yeah.
And then for the dog, it's more about finding that right personality trait mm-hmm. That we can easily get trained over in about a 6 to 8 week time period to meet that veteran's needs.
Are there certain dogs that are better? I mean, breeds. Are there certain breeds that are better than others, or is it sort of just a mix? I mean, is it just you just kind of know when you know?
Yeah, you kind of know when you know, and yeah. we don't necessarily go with a purebred. You know, there's purebreds all have different traits that they're bred for, and so there's a lot of them that are great, but they also all have great different personalities, just like you and I. So it's really at that point about a matter of matching up the personality with the veteran's personality, mm-hmm. So that there is that perfect match, and they connect.
So as you work with the dogs, as you train the dogs, I guess you would have to form a close relationship with that veteran, too, because, well, yes, I had my dog in obedience school, and, you know, I told you my story. He
yes,
was the kid, you know, smoking in the bathroom. But so you want to work closely with the veteran and... You know, so that they know how to handle the dog?
Yes, we'll go through, after we go through the interview process with the veteran, and that's actually a process of probably about 3 to 4 visits, mm-hmm. in home, out of mm-hmm. home, really getting to know them and then have them comfortable with us. When you're trying to put a new dog into somebody's life that's going to help them out, that veteran mm-hmm. also needs to be able to trust your judgment and trust what you're going to provide for them. So that... those kind of pieces go into it, and, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of our reasoning behind a lot of the interview process.
And I do want to mention that Chris also served in the U.S. military as an Air Force mechanic. So you really do embrace the benefit of a dog or a cat, a pet, something to sort of, like you said, be non-judgmental. You know, so
definitely
that's a great thing. If people are interested in finding out more about Pets for Vets, you can check out petsforvets.com/KC/MO. And so how long have you been doing this, Chris?
I've been a dog trainer for about 9 years now.
Yeah.
As far as Pets for Vets, we got involved with the organization as the chapter came about this year mm-hmm. in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, I've been with them for probably about 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
But the training piece has been 9 years.
Yeah.
Kind of leading up and I guess setting them up for an opportunity to really continue giving back to the community.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, with the program, how does it take me from the very start? How does, if someone's interested in becoming a pet owner, a veteran that wants to own a pet, what is the process like? What do they have to do first? What's the first step?
The first step is jumping on the on our website. Once you jump on our website, there's a form that you can fill out, and that form comes directly to us if you're in the Kansas City area mm-hmm. that we mm-hmm. cover. At that point, we'll review that and then go through setting up the interview process if it looks like it's going to be a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I can tell you that this is the Kansas City chapter of Pets for Vets, and there's a national organization that has bureaus in 34 U.S. cities. So it's not just specific to Kansas City, but we're fortunate that we now have a chapter here.
definitely.
Now, I know that in the green room, you and Joe were talking about, you know, getting a pet, and is there some involvement that the VA has to be a part of for this process?
For this organization, they do not. On the veteran side of it, and feel free to chime in on this one, on the veteran side of it, they can essentially give like a prescription card for it, mm-hmm. which will help them, help the veteran at that point cover all the medical and the cost of care for that mm-hmm. For that dog through the life of the dog. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, I'm kind of in the process of, you know, finding a service dog, you know, for my, you know, PTS. I mean, I can say that having a dog prior, how much it, you know, really helped me out in my kind of like day-to-day things. I mean, especially with my ankle injury, you know, it was kind of hard for me to get out of the house or want to move around. And I noticed when I got a dog, I was outside walking the dog, doing a lot more physical activities. And, you know, that's one thing I hope the VA can do a little bit better job on, is really kind of helping out veterans out in that aspect. Because, I mean, with everything with the VA, you know, you kind of got to jump through some hoops and doing all that stuff. And that's why it's great having, you know, Pets for Vets here now. Absolutely. Is you can kind of bypass that whole, you know, VA bureaucracy system and really kind of, you know, get to the source of what you need to help you out.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned, Chris is the owner of Dog Obedience Group in Blue Springs, Missouri, and that's dogwizard.com. So, what, as a dog owner, what is the number one, the first rule for dog owners? What do they need to know about working with their dog? Or is there one?
Just be prepared to train them and give them some structure and consistency. Yeah. It's really like having a child.
Yeah.
You've got to give them the opportunity to learn and know that you're going to have to put a little bit of work into it.
Yeah. Do you follow up with some of the veterans in the program? Well, of course, I know this is a fairly new chapter in Kansas City, but do you find that you'll end up following up on some of the veterans, or if they have questions or needs?
We'll definitely follow up on the veteran to make sure that relationship's going well. And we also want to ensure that they all the training that we put into the dog, that they are they've grasped all that and are successful. And they always have the opportunity to reach back out to us if they are having any struggles or any questions regarding their ongoing training and the ongoing relationship between them and their dog.
And is there also some sort of a plan B in case, well, this isn't working out, well, this dog is just maybe a little bit too much for me to handle, is there some sort of a plan B for that?
We can, in those situations, we can always try to take the dog back in. It's a very rare instance in the organization, because we do put so much time into getting to know the veteran and picking out the correct dog and putting in the amount of training. So it's not a common piece at all for either for that situation to come up.
Okay. You know what? We're going to take a real quick break for some underwriting, and we'll be right back with ArtSpeak Radio. This is Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, Joe Williams with EVAC Endowment for Veterans Art Campaign, and Chris White with Pets for Vets is in the studio with me live. Thank you all for sharing your Veterans Day with us.
Thank you.
Today.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, there's such a wealth of information for our community to take in and to educate them about these programs, which is so, so important for all of us. I'd like to, just tell us a little bit more about how the community can get involved with Pets for Vets or what you need from us in the community here in Kansas City.
Oh, great. Yeah, there's several things that we could use. We're always doing fundraisers. So jumping on our Facebook, you can always see where our different fundraisers are at. Mm-hmm. It's just like any other organization. The money gives you the freedom to help out more people. The other thing we could use are some more like foster families who can help out. Not all of our trainers can take in and train that dog on a day-to-day basis, but we can also train these foster families to train that dog and get it ready for that veteran, and we can work with them as the dog goes through that program. Mm-hmm. So some foster families, that just a 6 to 8 week obligation, they always have the opportunity to say no. Mm-hmm. But that is something that we could really, really benefit from.
And now, is there a number or contact information that folks can reach you at to become foster dog parents?
They jumping on our website and just going to the contact us, and then also through our Facebook. Those are the two best ways for us to. They can see the information that we need for volunteering, and then we can also start our conversations with them from that point.
And I know on the website petsforvets.com there is a section where it's broken down into different areas of the country, Midwest, Southwest and that sort of thing, so you can kind of maybe get some information that way too.
Definitely, you can find all the different organizations. So even if you do have a family member in need that's in a different state, they can also find that information there.
Terrific. Any last words from you, Chris or Joe, as we finish out our segment?
Thank you for having us on here, and if there's a veteran out there definitely in need of help, reach out and contact us. This is exactly what we're here for. And this is a conversation that we had earlier was, vets are gonna help vets out. That's why veterans start veteran organizations, because we still have that camaraderie, we still have that bond. So if you're out there hurting and need somebody to talk to or get involved into, whether it's an art project or finding a therapy dog or something like that, please feel free to contact us. I mean, that's what we're here for, is to help other veterans out and kind of help them move on with their lives.
Very good. Chris?
That was perfectly said. I don't have anything else.
Well spoken. On behalf of us here at KKFI and across the nation, thank you for your service in the military. Very greatly appreciate it. And thank you for what you do in the community to help other veterans.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's important. Yeah, you matter. Thank you. I'm going to switch gears now and tell you about our next segment, which is a pre-recorded or rebroadcast of a program earlier heard this year. In memory of Sandra Moran, who passed away November 7th, we want to express our deepest sympathy to her loving wife, Cheryl, Sandra's family, and the many friends whose lives were touched by her generous smile and loving spirit. Sandra spent this past year giving back to the LGBT community by co-hosting the 10th Voice on KKFI 90.1, and she was a board member of the Like Me Lighthouse, Kansas City, and literary events and reading events across the country she was involved. Miguel Morales, member of the fabulous queer writer group, wrote, "My friend, Johnson County Community College colleague, and fellow fabulous queer writer Sandra Moran died yesterday. She changed the literary landscape. You may not know it, but you'll feel it when you read authors from the Midwest and from other queer writers. Sandra is an award-winning author of Letters Never Sent, All We Lack, Nudge, and The Addendum." And I do want to let our listeners know that Sandra's memorial, a memorial honoring Sandra, will be held in the Capitol Federal Room of the Rainier Center on the Johnson County Community College campus from 1 to 3 this Saturday, November 14th. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests a donation to the Golden Crown Literary Society, which is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. In the memo line for donations, please note Sandra Moran Scholarship Fund. And now here's Sandra. You're listening to Arts Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, and that was the lovely Sandra Moran. Thank you so much, Sandra, for that lovely love story.
You're welcome. Yes. You're welcome. I really thought that it captured the moment.
Yes, it did. I want to tell you a little bit about Sandra. She's an anthropologist, an educator. She's a writer. Her books are Letters Never Sent, Nudge, All We Lack, and she's also the co-host every fifth Saturday for the 10th Voice. So, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, your first time out on the radio 2 weeks ago was terrific.
Oh, thank you so much. It was wonderful to be here with you and Elizabeth.
Well, and you know what? We really got some wonderful feedback from people in the UK.
I know. Wasn't that exciting?
That was your uncle, right?
A good friend.
Sandra, you're really you've been doing a lot of book signings and that. What events do you have coming up?
Well, I have my newest book, All We Lack, is coming out March 31st.
Uh-huh.
And I will be doing a First Friday art walk in Topeka at the Eclective.
Terrific.
The first, and then I will be going to Texas, where I'll be doing a couple of events there in Austin and then also in Dallas.
So if people want to check out your website, that is
www.sandramoran.com.
And one more thing, did you just recently begin a blog?
I did recently begin a blog.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it's going to be on the randomness of life.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's hear your love story, too.
Well, my story is a short fiction story, and it's titled A Cup of Chai. I'm standing in line at Henry's Coffee House when I get the news. Like everyone else, I'm multitasking as I wait for the anxious guy at the counter, an intern, I'm guessing, to finish detailing his list of complicated drinks and pastries. In the corner to my left, the cluster of retirees that I've come to call the Gang of Eight are crowded around the long, scarred wooden table that everyone else seems to understand is off-limits. As usual, the three in the middle are talking over each other in that loud way that old men have when they no longer command a boardroom or a warehouse floor. We've never exchanged names, these men and I, but we know each other. We are aware of each other's routines. Which is why, when the ruddy-faced farmer, a quiet man I call John because of his misshapen green hat, meets my eye and jerks his chin in recognition, I smile. It's the same greeting we've shared every morning for the past 3 years. Presence acknowledged, he returns his attention to his friends, and I look back down at my phone. I almost delete Alan's message because his name, for whatever reason, doesn't register. But I don't. I tap the screen to open the message, and there, surrounded by the rows of anchor-hawking jars of coffee beans and exotic teas, with the hollow gurgling suck of milk bean frost, I read the words that never would have occurred to me. Dear Beth, I'm so sorry to be the one to have to tell you this, but Hannah has died. The force of the words pull the breath from me. I hunch slightly forward, shallow, and fight the sudden urge to urinate. I close my eyes, but the words, cold and emotionless in Times New Roman, skate across the insides of my eyelids. Hannah has died. The woman behind me makes a noise in her throat, and I jerk my head up. The man in front of me has moved forward several inches, which means that I need to do the same. I can't feel my feet, but I close the distance between us and then look back down at my phone. It happened 2 years ago. I only just now have gotten around to closing down her email accounts and found your message. It was an aneurysm. She died instantly. I'm so sorry, Beth. For us, though the pain still lingers, we have had time to adjust. For you, though, this loss is fresh and probably very shocking. I know she thought well of you and mentioned you many times over the years. I know you were very special to her. I'm sorry, Alan. I stare again at the first line of the message. Hannah is dead. Hannah, with her irrepressible peals of laughter, her pointed chin, her delicate wrists. Hannah is dead, and not newly dead, if there were such a thing, but 2 years dead. I swallow again, but this time through a thickening throat. All of me feels swollen. My chest, my head, the space behind the backs of my eyes. I struggle not to weep in front of these familiar strangers, not to share with them the pain of my long ago, never acknowledged loss. I stare doggedly at the back of the man in front of me. I memorize the texture of his black wool coat. I resist the urge to pluck a glaring piece of lint from his shoulder, the imperfection of it angering me in a way that makes no sense. I should have known. I should have had somehow sensed it, shouldn't I? She had been my first female lover, though we had never even kissed. Instead, we would sit cross-legged on the warped wooden floor of her one-room graduate school apartment, the air heavy with incense and Joni Mitchell, and talk. We talked and we touched, light brushes of fingertips to the backs of hands and wrists. She was an inappropriate obsession that I couldn't understand at the time, that I would only come to understand much later when I had accepted my attraction to women. The man in front of me shuffles forward, as do we all, another 6 inches closer to the tattooed barista who moves fluidly with a practiced efficiency that reminds me of Hannah when she cooked. I decide that I want chai, in honor of Hannah who loves spices, especially in her food. I taste suddenly the memory of the rich harara she would make on Sunday afternoons, the fragrant aroma of the simmering garlic, ginger, cinnamon, onion, filling the room as we lounged on the floor, sipping thick chai. She researching her dissertation and me struggling to concentrate on Socrates or Machiavelli. Not infrequently, I would look up to find her watching me, her expression a combination of affection and uncertainty. Hannah didn't immediately share the fact that she was dating Alan. It wasn't until I saw them out at the local co-op that I realized that her friend, Alan, was more than just a fellow graduate student. I'd gone there to buy some of what I had known to be her favorite teas. I'd wanted to surprise her. I was laboring over my choices when I heard the laughter. Her laughter. Tea in hand, I walked to the end of the aisle and peeked around the cheap metal shelving. She was standing with a tall, thin man with dark, moppish hair. He was looking down at her, his expression one of amusement. I was about to go over to say hello and perhaps, selfishly, insert myself into their joke. But then I saw him reach for her hand, and I saw her take it, twisting their grip so that their fingers were intertwined, their palms touching. And then she lifted her gaze to meet his. Her expression was one that I recognized. It was both familiar and foreign, intimate in a way that I had only seen in movies. I never told her that I saw her that day. I never gave her the tea that I'd so carefully chosen and then thrown away in spite. I never told her that she broke my heart. Instead, I disappeared, and she, newly in love, didn't notice. Not really. It was only months later, after the energy and how we navigated our space changed, that I met Alan. The three of us had met at Henry's. We'd sat at the end of the off-limits table. They'd had tea, and I had coffee. We reconnected years later when, on a whim, I sent her an email about a new Moroccan recipe I had tried that made me think of her. Her response was warm, and I could hear the intonation of her speech in my head. She was married. She was living in Boston. Life had turned out differently than she had expected, but it was good. And would it be okay if she put me on their Christmas newsletter list? I stare now at Alan's message as I realize that I hadn't received that newsletter in 2 years. I hadn't received it, and I hadn't even noticed. I'm angry, though, at her or him or myself, I don't know. Usual? I look up. It's my turn. The barista pauses, and I nod. Could I also get a latte? It's all I can do to wait while she froths the milk and makes my drinks. I force my hands not to shake as I hand her the money and then carry the paper cups outside. One coffee, one chai. Outside, the sun is shining and the air is sharp on my cheeks and in my nose. I gulp it in and only realize when I feel the tears sneaking wetly down my cheeks that I'm crying. I sink down against the side of the building, the drinks clumsily placed on either side of me. The red bricks scrape at the back of my leather coat, but I don't care. I don't care about anything except the void within me that belongs to the Hannah that I knew all those years ago. The Hannah who set my sexuality in motion, and the Hannah whose loss I am only now allowing myself to mourn. I cry until I have nothing left, and then I stand. I look down at the drinks. One coffee, one chai. I choose the chai.